Marie Bernard, host of Synchronicity, Friday mornings at 9. Join me as we explore topics like health and wellness, prosperity, inner peace, the law of attraction, and more. Tap into good vibrations to start your weekend feeling uplifted and optimistic. Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. Fridays from 9 to 10 a.m. on CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver. Good morning. Welcome to Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and I'm so thrilled to be back after a long time off for the holidays. So this is the first time that I get to wish you a very happy 2011. I know it's a little bit late, but I wanted to say Happy New Year. So thanks so much for tuning in. And today we have a very special guest, Michael Cremo. He is author of The Forbidden Archaeologist, and we're going to find out exactly what that means. And he's going to be coming to Vancouver to speak very soon. So we'll be talking to him about his book and what he's coming to Vancouver to talk about. Welcome to the show, Michael.
Great to be with you, Marie, and all your listeners.
Thank you so much. So do you know when you're coming to Vancouver?
Let me look at my calendar here. I'm coming to Vancouver in the first week of March.
Okay.
I'll be speaking at some events there, and people can learn about them on my webpage, mcremo.com. There's a schedule page there. On the 6th of March, I'll be at Banyan Books at 11:30 a.m., and I'll be speaking at a conference over the weekend.
Wonderful.
Of 4th and the 5th.
Wonderful. Okay. Well, so in March, if you like what you hear, you can check out Michael Cremo. So, Michael, what is The Forbidden Archaeologist? Why is it forbidden?
Well, I deal with evidence for extreme human antiquity, and by that I mean human bones, human artifacts, human footprints that go back millions and millions and millions of years. You know, according to the standard theories that are taught in schools, human beings like us first came into existence about 150,000 years ago, and we're told that before that, there were no human beings like us. There were simply more primitive ape-like human ancestors. And I don't accept that theory of human evolution. I don't think we evolved from apes. I think humans have always been present on Earth, and there's a lot of archaeological evidence to support that, which I've written about in my books, like The Forbidden Archaeologist and Forbidden Archaeology. And the reason I call it forbidden is because these things just simply aren't mentioned in the textbooks. They're there in the original scientific reports. Many scientists have actually discovered these things, but they do not make their way into the textbooks because of what I call a process of knowledge filtration that operates in the world of science. So that's why I call it forbidden archaeology. They're things that you're just not going to read about in your textbooks in high school or university. That's the reason why I call it forbidden archaeology and why I call myself the forbidden archaeologist.
And so, Michael, I'm curious because part of the reason that scientists don't believe that humans have been around for millions and millions of years is because, as far as I know, they haven't found human bones from millions of years ago.
Oh, actually, some scientists have. For example, in the 19th century, there was an Italian geologist, Dr. Giuseppe Ragazzoni. He was conducting some excavations at a place called Castagnetolo in the mountains of northern Italy, the foothills of the Alps. And in these excavations, he found several human skeletons in layers of rock that modern geologists tell us are between 3 and 4 million years old. There are many other cases like this where scientists have found evidence in the form of human skeletal remains in layers of rock many millions of years old. In the year 1862, there was a report published in a scientific journal called The Geologist. It told of a human skeleton that was found 90 feet below the surface of the ground in the state of Illinois in the United States. And according to modern geologists, the layers of rock in which this human skeleton was found are over 300 million years old. And there are actually dozens of cases like this. Discoveries of human skeletons found in layers of rock millions of years old, discoveries made and reported by professional scientists, but which simply are not mentioned in the textbooks. And I think the reason is that the scientists who are now writing the textbooks are very committed to the Darwinian theory of evolution, and therefore either they're not aware of this evidence, or if they are aware of it, they think there must be something wrong with it. It couldn't possibly be true because it contradicts the theory that they believe in.
So, Michael, does that make you a creationist?
Well, it does in a sense, because I don't think anyone has really explained in any detailed way exactly how our human form, with all its complex organs and structures, could have come about simply by random genetic mutations. Of course, that's the idea that's presented in the textbooks, that long ago there were some very simple life forms, single-celled creatures living in the Earth's ocean, and then somehow or other these single-celled creatures started clumping together and forming multi-celled organisms like primitive plants, seaweeds, fish, and things like that. And then some of them came onto the land and became land plants and land animals. And some of the simple animals became monkeys, and some of the simple monkeys became ape men, and some of them became human beings. And they think it happened genetically. But nobody's ever explained exactly how that happened. For example, we have eyes, and eyes are very complex structures. And how did the eye come about? Well, they would say long ago there was some simple animal that didn't have an eye, and then there was supposedly some change in its DNA and its genetic structure that led to the formation of the simple eye. And then over many, many millions of years, there were many, many more genetic changes in the DNA that led to the formation of the human eye, which is very complex, a very wonderful machine, really. But if you look in the textbooks, you can't really find any detailed explanation of exactly what genetic changes took place over the course of those many millions of years that led to the formation of the human eye. It's just asserted. It happened by evolution. It happened by genetic mutations. But the details aren't given. And because the details aren't given, I think it's legitimate to propose alternatives. I think it's very legitimate to propose there must be some kind of intelligence involved in the production of the complex organisms and structures, you know, that we find in the human species. If we see any complex machine, we wonder, well, who made it? Who created it? So I think it's entirely legitimate to look at the marvelous human form and say it must have had some creator.
And so, Michael, I'm curious, if we didn't evolve, where do you think we came from? Did someone just plop us here? Some people think that we came here from another planet. Some people think we're like hybrids of slaves from some other galaxy. I mean, what do you believe?
Well, I think you're right. People like simple explanations. Some people prefer a simple evolution account, the chemicals combined together in the Earth's ocean and the whole process of evolution took place.
Evolution isn't really simple, though. I mean, it's pretty complicated.
Well, but it's presented as a simple idea. And some people prefer a simple extraterrestrial account, that some ETs came and visited and manipulated the genes of some ape man and turned him into a human being. And then some people prefer a very simple creation account. God, created everything in the beginning, and that's it. But I think all three things are involved. I think there is some kind of cosmic intelligence, some higher intelligence that's involved in the whole process. I think there is intelligent life in other parts of the cosmos, so there are extraterrestrial beings. And I think there is a kind of evolution involved, but not the kind that's talked about in the textbooks, not the kind that's talked about by Charles Darwin and his modern followers. I think before we even ask the question, where did human beings come from, we should first of all ask the question, what is a human being? And today, many scientists will say, well, we're just very complex machines made of molecules. That's what a human being or any other living thing is. Just a complex arrangement of the ordinary material elements like calcium and iron and phosphorus. That's what we are. We're machines made of matter. But I think there's more to it than that. First of all, there's consciousness, which has nothing to do with iron or calcium or anything like that. Consciousness is something that can exist apart from matter, I believe. And there's evidence for this in the form of medical studies of out-of-body experiences and past life memories and things like that. So I believe consciousness can exist apart from matter. Now, today, many scientists don't believe that. Actually, most of them don't believe that. They think that consciousness is just produced by chemicals interacting in the brain. And if you disorganize the chemicals, there's no more consciousness, no more love, none of that. Under that picture of reality, it's matter that's primary. And they believe that matter can temporarily produce consciousness in association with matter. But when the matter disorganizes, no more consciousness. However, I believe that it's consciousness that is primary. It's consciousness that always exists. And under certain circumstances, consciousness can become temporarily covered by matter, and those coverings are what we call bodies. So originally, I believe, we existed on a level of pure consciousness. And the ruling principle of that level of pure consciousness is love and harmony. If a conscious self becomes egotistical, becomes greedy, becomes selfish, it can no longer exist in that harmony, and it needs another place in which it can act out its selfish fantasies. And this material world is that place. And we require vehicles to function here, and these vehicles are what we call bodies. Just like as human beings, we're normally meant to live on the land. And if we want to live in a different element, like If we want to live under the water, we need a diving suit or a submarine, something like that, to allow us to function in that alien element. So similarly, as beings of pure consciousness, we're normally meant to live in a world of pure consciousness. But if we become egotistical, we can no longer exist there. We come to the world of matter. But when we come here, we're in an alien element, and we need vehicles that will allow us to function on this level of reality. So those vehicles are what we call bodies. So where do those vehicles come from? Well, just like the submarine or the diving suit, it comes from engineers who understand that if a human being is going to exist under the water, it needs a vehicle that will allow it to function there. So these engineers, they design and build these vehicles. So similarly, there's a higher intelligence in the cosmos that understands if conscious selves are going to exist in the world of matter, they need vehicles made of matter in order to function there. So this higher intelligence arranges for those bodies to be designed and built.
So
the difference,
Michael, I'm curious, though. You mentioned that if we become egotistical, then we come here into a body. But if you're pure conscious energy, I mean, doesn't it take a body to become egotistical? If you're pure consciousness, there is no ego, right?
Well, consciousness can have its own form. I believe consciousness has its own form. We have an original form of pure consciousness. And the difference between that form and the form we have now is that the form we have now is different from the self. Just like if you're riding in a car, the car is different than you. But so similarly, the material body that we have now is different from the self, and it's constantly changing. It comes into existence at some point in time, and it will cease existing at some point in time, although the conscious self will go on through the process of reincarnation to get another vehicle. But originally, we have a form, a body, made of pure consciousness that is not different from the self. It's our original identity. We all have an original form of pure consciousness, a body of pure consciousness. That's the real body, and it's not different from the self. It's something that doesn't decay as this form we have now will decay eventually. So, yes, we originally do have a body, a form of pure consciousness, a spiritual body, you could call it, if you like to use that word.
All right. Thank you, Michael. It's time to take a break, so we will be back with more synchronicity in a moment. We are speaking with Michael Cremo. He is the author of Forbidden Archaeology, and we'll speak with him more in a moment. Welcome back to Synchronicity after a very long break over the holidays. Thanks so much for being with me. I'm Marie Bernard.
Dignity, respect,
beauty,
self-worth,
safety,
confidence,
choice,
hope.
The Beauty Night Society is a registered charity dedicated to helping marginalized women introduce trust, hope, and self-esteem into their lives.
Through its popular makeover program, the Beauty Night Society has touched the lives of thousands and reintroduced a healthy touch to the lives of vulnerable women throughout British Columbia, creating real life makeovers.
Please visit www.beautynight.org for information on programs and on how to help. Beauty Night, because dignity is beautiful.
I think I was blind before I met you.
Welcome back to Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul here on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver, or you might also be listening online at citr.ca, cosmicdimensions.com, empowerradio.com, or on the Co-Creator Network. Thank you for being with us, no matter where you're listening from. And if you have a question for Michael Cremo today, 604-822-2487, 604-822-2487. Give us a shout if you'd like to ask him a question about forbidden archaeology and his theory that humans have been on this planet for millions of years. When exactly, Michael, would you say we arrived here? Or, I mean, because the planet is much older than millions of years old, so we haven't Yes. always been here.
So a lot of my ideas are inspired by my studies in the ancient Sanskrit writings of India, and these writings speak of a cyclical process of time. So in these vast cycles of time, sometimes the universes are being manifested, and sometimes they're not being manifested. They're in a dormant state. So during the times of manifestation, life, including human life, is present. And during the times of non-manifestation of life, the life isn't manifested. Of course, life appears on the stage of the universe, so the stage is always there. Just like you may have a stage in a theater, and sometimes the play is going on, and sometimes the curtains are closed, and there's nothing going on. So according to this ancient cosmology, with this cyclical time concept that is there in a lot of different cultures, there's the Mayan calendar, the ancient Greeks and Romans, they also had a cyclical concept of time. So under this idea, the most recent manifestation event in terms of life, human life, started about 2 billion years ago, according to the Vedic cosmological calendar of ancient India. And therefore, I would expect to find evidence for a human presence going back to roughly about 2 billion years ago, which, according to modern paleontology, is just about when life began on Earth. You know, scientists today believe that the first life forms appeared between 2 and 3 billion years ago, so it's roughly the same period. Of course, the modern scientists would tend to think that only the most simple life forms were present in the very beginning of the history of life on Earth, but I would say they were all present, including the human form. And therefore, there's not the kind of materialistic evolution that most scientists now believe in, but there's a kind of spiritual evolution. It's an evolution of the soul or the conscious self through different forms. One soul could start out in the form of an amoeba, and its next life it could get a higher form, and its next life a higher form, and eventually evolve up to the human form of life. Just like, you know, a person in a city might live in different sorts of apartments. Maybe, you know, they might start out renting a simple apartment, and then maybe later they get a bigger apartment, and then later they move into a condo, and then later they buy their own house in some area of the city. It's the same person, but it evolves through different houses. So in a similar way, we could say that the conscious self, the soul, evolves through different forms of life, different vehicles, bodily vehicles, according to its level of consciousness. So that's the kind of evolution that I think takes place, and it would have started, I believe, about 2 billion years ago on Earth.
And so, I mean, it's difficult for me to, I mean, I'm so used to this Darwinian picture.
Most of us are.
So it's hard for me to wrap my head around it, because also we only have written history that we've been able to access for, a few thousand years. And so, I mean, these humans, 1 billion or 2 billion years ago, if they were here on the planet, I mean, they must have been, we've obviously had some evolution since then. They might have been in a human body, but they're, I'm guessing, probably wasn't the same level of intelligence as we have today.
Well, it may have been higher, for all we know. It's I mean, how high is our intelligence? If we look at the world that we live in, we can see that it's not always working in the best possible way.
True.
Of course. And I believe that's because there are two types of people in the world. Because originally, as I said, I believe we're all beings of pure consciousness. We come from some higher level of reality, and there's some people who understand that we're all related, we're all coming from the same source, we're all beings of pure consciousness. We should be trying to restore consciousness to its original pure state. And then there are other people who are more influenced by trying to dominate, control, and exploit matter and other people and other forms of life, and they keep getting more and more deeply into that. And I think that's the root of our environmental crisis. We're producing and consuming too much in an unsustainable way, and I think it's this concept of the Darwinian theory of evolution, which tells us we're machines made of matter in competition with each other for survival, is also responsible for a lot of the intense levels of conflict that we see in the world today. You know, there's conflict among individuals, conflict among classes, among nations, among religions. It's a very competitive type of environment that's been created. Whereas those who see that we all have a common source in pure consciousness would tend to look at the world in a different way, that we're all in this together. We shouldn't be fighting with each other for control of oil and gas and coal and rare earth minerals and whatever. And you know, we should be trying to live in the most simple, natural, and efficient way possible in harmony with each other while putting a lot of our human energy into developing the resource of consciousness. So you've got these two basic types, those that are basically influenced by the Darwinian theory of evolution, which tells us, yes, we're machines made of matter, but we're purely material beings in competition with each other for survival, and that's our purpose of life. It creates a lot of distortions in our human society. The environmental crisis, where we're taking too much of the Earth's resources and not using things in a proper way. Too much conflict in the world, too much exploitation, greed. I think that's the root of the financial crisis. You know, people are in competition with each other for control of financial resources, and some people misuse their positions to take more than their fair share, and it causes lots of problems for everyone. I think part of the solution is to have a different concept of the self. You know, the goals that we set for ourselves individually and collectively are to a large extent determined by our concept of self. And for example, if I think I'm an American man, then I behave like that because I think that's my identity. Of course, I think I have an identity beyond that. I'm a being of pure consciousness from some higher level of reality that has nothing to do with America, Russia, China, or anything like that. And you know, I try to see things in that way, see everyone as equal on the level of pure consciousness, not just human beings, but the conscious cells that are in the forms of plants, animals. They also deserve respect. And I don't think the main purpose in life should be to try to get as much as I can at the expense of others. That mentality is what's led us into our current financial crisis all over the world. As I said, I think we should be trying to live in the most simple, natural, and efficient way possible on this planet, not trying to overexploit the resources, not trying to overproduce and overconsume in competition with others who are also trying to overproduce and overconsume. That's a recipe for disaster. And I think the fundamental change that has to take place is a change in the concept of self, because if we change our concept of self, then we develop new values, new goals, new purpose in life.
Thank you, Michael. Well, it's time to take another break, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're speaking with Michael Cremo. If you would like to check out his website, it's mcremo.com, mcremo.com. He is the author of The Forbidden Archaeologist, and we'll be speaking with more with him in just a moment. And he is going to be in Vancouver in March, speaking at Banyan Books, as well as a weekend workshop or lecture series. So we will be back in just a moment.
Every year, for some time now, CITR Radio in Vancouver and a few independent and college radio stations around the globe have worked to give modern art a transmitter. The concept of giving art a birthday was introduced by French-born artist-slash-peacenik Robert Filliou. In 1963, he asserted that 1 million years ago there was no art. But one day, on the 17th of January to be precise, art was born when someone dropped a dry sponge into a bucket of water. 24 hours of radio art will broadcast midnight to midnight, January 17th on CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver and online at citr.ca.
Welcome back to Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and today we are speaking with Michael Cremo here on 101.9 FM in Vancouver. If you would like to get on the air and ask him a question, the number to call is 604-822-2487. That's 604-822-2487. Welcome back to the show, Michael.
Hi.
And so if, let's say, we have been around for a couple billion years as humans, this whole industrial revolution, our whole like ruining of our planet and the economies and all of that, I mean, that's only been going on for the last few hundred years, really, as far like since the industrial revolution is when we really started damaging the planet. And so what do you think led, I mean, if we were living off the land for billions of years and then in just the last maybe 1,000 years or so, we've really started to get more wrapped up in matter and all of this. What do you think led to that?
Well, as I was saying, according to my point of view, time is cyclical. So I think this may not be the first time that we've come into this position, because you know, according to a lot of ancient wisdom traditions, including the ancient wisdom tradition of India, with which I'm very familiar, time goes in vast cycles. And during some parts of the cycle, human consciousness is more materialistic than other times. It's like in the course of a year, you get different seasons. There's spring, then there's summer, then there's fall, then there's winter, and in winter things are very, very difficult. But then comes another spring. So I think in the vast span of time, of billions of years, human civilizations have risen and fallen many different times on this planet. I don't think this is the first time that we've achieved, you know, these high levels of technology and destructive technologies. It's happened before. This idea was there among the Greeks and Romans, like Plato and Aristotle. They both said in their writings that human civilizations have risen and fallen many times. So I don't think it's necessarily the first time that we've done this. But according to the cosmological calendar of ancient India, we're now in a very materialistic time. It's called the Kali Yuga, where there's a lot of quarrel, hypocrisy, materialism. It's just the nature of the age. So, but after this age, there'll be another golden age where people are living more naturally and harmoniously together with each other in a more sustainable way. But as the cycles progress, just as each year we go through the cycle of the seasons, there's also a progression of psychological seasons in the larger spans of time that are there. So this Kali Yuga is a time of excessive materialism and quarrel and hypocrisy. It'll end at a certain point in time, and then there'll be another golden age, but then things get progressively worse according to these accounts that are found in the ancient Sanskrit writings of India. The first age in the cycle is a golden age where people are living harmoniously with nature. And then in the second age, things become a little bit more materialistic. People start dividing themselves into classes of people and developing cities and things like that. And then in the third age, things become a bit more materialistic. And finally in the fourth age, which we're in now, the Kali Yuga, things get worse, but then things will get better again. It's just like in the course of the year, we have to adjust to the different seasons. There's nothing we can do about the seasons, but we can try to adjust ourselves. For example, if winter is coming, well, we can take steps to make sure we keep warm, we're properly dressed, and things like that. Can't stop the winter from coming, but we can make adjustments. So similarly, in terms of these larger cycles of time, yes, we are living in an age of excessive materialism. That's part of the climate, the psychological climate that's there. That's very difficult to change. But just because that is the overall situation doesn't mean that individually and collectively we can't take steps to deal with that. And that's our only recourse. As I said, you can't stop winter from coming, but you can try to keep you and your family and others warm.
So, Michael, I ask a lot of people on this show, and I'm going to ask you, what do you think is going to happen at the end of 2012?
Well, for me, as I said, I get a lot of my inspiration from the ancient Sanskrit writings of India, which tell us that we're in a Kali Yuga. It's in the age of Kali, the Kali Yuga, we're told that human society and the environment become progressively more disturbed. There's not going to be a huge devastation that's going to wipe out the earth. That may happen in the future in terms of the ancient Vedic cosmological calendar. There are huge devastations that periodically take place on Earth. But according to that calendar from ancient India, those huge devastations are many, many millions of years in the future. But it is the Kali Yuga. It is a time of increasing environmental disturbance and increasing social disturbance. So I could expect that in 2012, there may be some environmental and social disturbances, but they're not going to be huge catastrophes that are going to wipe out life on Earth, as shown in one of the films about 2012 that appeared within the past couple of years. And even within the people who are researching this 2012 idea, which comes from the Mayan calendar of Central America, they have different ideas about it. Some of them suggest, well, it is going to be some huge catastrophe, and some are suggesting, no, it's just going to be the beginning of another age, and some are suggesting it may be a time of enlightenment. So I tend to think, you know, based on what I know and what I'm committed to, that yes, in 2012 there could be some minor catastrophes, but it's not going to be the end of life on Earth. And it's also an opportunity for enlightenment. sometimes we may need that, a little bit of a push to start thinking about higher things. So that's what I think is going to happen.
Wonderful. Thank you. And so I'm curious, it's only been quite recently that scientists have discovered this hobbit creature. And I'm wondering what your view is on this little person that scientists have discovered.
Well, this is a discovery that was made in Indonesia. There's an island in Indonesia called Flores Island. And in the 1990s, archaeologists began doing some excavations there. And then more recently, within the past few years, they uncovered the skeleton of a little ape man about 3 feet tall with a very primitive sort of physique, very small, very tiny. And they like to characterize these ape men as human ancestors. I mean, technically, the creature has a scientific name. They call it Homo floresiensis. But, if you kind of heard on the news, scientists discover fossils of Homo floresiensis or something. It doesn't make a lot of sense to most people. So these scientists very much want us to think that these ape men are our ancestors. I mean, we're human beings. They want us to think that these little ape men were our ancestors. So one of the psychological tricks that they use is they try to give them human names. Like many years ago in Ethiopia, they found some fossils of an ape man called Australopithecus afarensis, little creature about 3.5 feet tall, very ape-like, long arms, was obviously swinging around in trees. But they wanted people to think, this is your ancestor, so they made up a name for it, Lucy. And everybody knows that, because people might have, their mother's name might be Lucy, their sister's name, their daughter's name, their niece's name. It kind of makes you identify with it. You don't, if you just see some little bone of some little ape man with some scientific name called Australopithecus afarensis, you wouldn't identify with it very much. But if you call it Lucy, then you think, oh, that's related to me somehow. So it's the same thing with this fossil ape man that was discovered in Indonesia. Because scientists want us to think of these things as our ancestors or related to us in some way like that, they give them, it's a marketing technique, they give them a name like Hobbit, because people saw the films, the Lord of the Rings, films, and there's going to be actually films coming out on the Hobbit. So people identify with that, these fuzzy little humans, called hobbits, so they identify with them, they feel related to them, so scientists give their fossil ape men names like that, the hobbit. So that's how I look at that issue.
And so what about this cradle of lies? In your book, you call the, I don't know if I'm saying it right, Sterkfontein Cave in South Africa, you call it the cradle of lies. Why is that?
Well, Sterkfontein Caves are a place in South Africa where some scientists in 1947 discovered a fossil skull of an ape man. They called it Australopithecus africanus. And they believed that this was a human ancestor. And this is, of course, what's taught in all the textbooks and schools and things like that. I don't accept it, but that's what they want us to believe. They want us to believe that an ape man who lived 3 million years ago in Africa was about 3 feet tall. That was our ancestor. That became a human being. So these Sterkfontein caves where the skull of this ape man was discovered, it's now a United Nations World Heritage Site. And the name they give to it is Cradle of Humanity. And it's a huge tourist destination in South Africa. I've been there myself. I was in South Africa giving some lectures, but I also visited the Sterkfontein Caves. So So before you can go into the caves. You're taken on a guided tour into the caves. But before you go into the cave, you have to go to a museum. And when you enter the museum, there's a big sign that says "Discover Yourself." Of course, that's nice. We should all want to discover ourselves. We should know who we are and where we came from. That's very important. If we don't really know who we are and where we came from, we can't really act in our own self-interest. You know, if somebody has an incorrect conception of who they are and where they came from, well, they're going to get in trouble and cause trouble to other people. So, yeah, let's discover ourselves. So when you go into the museum, what kind of self do you discover? The first thing you see in the museum is a big quote from Richard Dawkins that tells you, you know, what you are. Richard Dawkins, a famous evolutionary scientist from England, and they've got a big quote from him saying, "We are robot vehicles blindly programmed to preserve the selfish molecules known as genes." So that's what you are. You're a robot molecular machine in competition with other robot molecular machines to preserve your genes. You know, that's what you are. And you're an evolved ape. That's another thing you learn there. So I think these are very materialistic conceptions of the self. And it's the wrong conception of the self. And I think because we have this wrong conception of who we are and where we came from, we've got so many problems in the world today. But in any case, you have to go through this museum and see this definition of the self. You're a robot molecular machine in competition with other robot molecular machines for survival. You're an evolved ape, another type of animal. And then after you go through the museum, then you're allowed to go into the cave, and then you're shown the place where the skull of this ape man, Australopithecus africanus, was found. And it's sort of like, it's conducted like a religious pilgrimage sort of place. It's just made to think, yes, you're an evolved ape, which I don't accept. And that's why I say the Sterkfontein caves are not the cradle of humankind, as they're advertised. It's a cradle of lies, really. It's not true that we're robot vehicles blindly programmed to preserve the selfish molecules known as genes. We're not just evolved ape men. That's not what we really are. We are beings of pure consciousness. We're higher than that. So that's why I call the place not the cradle of humanity as it's advertised, but cradle of lies, because there's a lot of archaeological evidence showing that human beings like us were present at the same time as our supposed ancestor from the Sterkfontein caves three million years ago. There are human footprints, human skeletons, human artifacts showing that humans like us were present on Earth at the same time and even before our supposed ape man ancestor at the Sterkfontein caves.
All right. Well, I have so many more questions and we're starting to run out of time. It's time for another break. So we'll be back with more on this discussion on forbidden archaeology with Michael Cremo. And this is CITR 101.9 FM here in Vancouver. I'm your host, Marie Bernard. We'll be back with more Synchronicity in a flash.
The AMS Sexual Assault Support Center offers support services to survivors of sexual assault and other forms of violence, as well as their friends, family members, and partners. They are committed to education and the support of students, staff, faculty, and visitors of all genders. They offer counseling, accompaniments, information, and referrals. They also facilitate specialized workshops and training sessions, develop public education campaigns, and hold special events related to anti-violence work. All services are free and confidential. For more information on programs and services or on volunteer opportunities, visit their website, www.ams.ubc.ca/SASC.
Welcome back to Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard. Thanks for being with us. And we're speaking today with Michael Cremo. If you would like to access his website, it's mcremo.com, mcremo.com. And welcome back to the show, Michael.
Hi. Good to be back with you, Marie.
Thank you. And so before the break, you had mentioned that part of the world's problems and all this materialism is based on our Darwinian look at the world. But there are billions of people who believe in creationism, and yet they're still running amok and not behaving themselves either. So
I don't think that materialism is 100% the fault of Darwinism. That's, Charles Darwin was born in, he published his theory in 1859, and certainly there was materialism in the world before that. However, it has certainly played a role in encouraging it. And we have to keep in mind that even though somebody may be some kind of have some kind of faith background that involves religion and creation, that doesn't necessarily mean that they're not influenced by the materialism of that comes from Darwinism, because people may believe in God. It's not that every type of spirituality is not materialistic, because many people could simply wind up, say if you're influenced by the ideas of evolution, which tells us, okay, you're a purely material being, you're a molecular machine, there's no higher purpose in life, there's no God, no soul, anything like that. Your purpose is to produce and consume in this world. Then you'll think that the main goal of life is to produce and consume more and more material things. And then, so even if you believe in God and some kind of creation, you'll just be praying to God, help me produce and consume more and more material things. So I think you're right about that, that there are people who may believe in some kind of creationism, but they're still materialistic. But I think part of the reason why they are is because when they go to school, in every education system around the world, the Darwinian theory of evolution has an absolute monopoly. No other ideas can be taught about human origins in any of the school systems all around the world. So they have a monopoly, so that even if people do believe in God or some kind of creation, they can still be influenced in a materialistic way by these theories that they're taught in the education system, so that even if they believe in some creator, believe in God, they'll say, well, yeah, please help me, God, produce and consume more and more material things. So a genuine spirituality has some higher purpose than trying to produce and consume as much as possible. There's the idea of producing and consuming what we actually need. I think it was Gandhi who once said, the earth has enough for everyone's needs, but not enough for everyone's greed. And we're starting to find that out now. I mean, in the United States and Europe and Japan and probably Canada as well, we exist at a very high level. We're consuming a lot of resources to maintain our lifestyle. And now billions of people in India and China and other parts of the developing world, they want, that same standard. And the earth just cannot sustain that. We're finding that out. So I think what's going to be necessary is voluntary simplicity. It's like eating. For example, if I eat too much of the wrong kinds of food, it's going to be bad for my health. But the solution isn't to stop eating. It's to eat the right amounts of the right kinds of food. And to do that requires some voluntary discipline, you know, controlling the amount of food I eat, controlling the kinds of food I eat, and also having enough discipline to engage in a proper amount of exercise, then I can kind of bring my weight to a healthy level. So similarly, with our whole human society today, it's just totally out of balance. We're producing and consuming too much, and we're producing and consuming at an unsustainable level. And this is simply being encouraged by the ideas of the Darwinian theory of evolution, which tell us, yeah, we're robot machines made of matter in competition with each other for survival, and we just have to do everything we can like that. So I think we need another concept of the self that would say, okay, we're not just machines made of matter, we're beings of pure consciousness. We're in the world of matter now, but that doesn't mean we should be fighting and competing with each other to produce and consume to the maximum extent possible. There's an actual optimal level of material production and consumption. You know, if we look at the Earth's resources and our actual needs, there's some optimal level of material production and consumption. So individually and collectively, we should learn to live at that optimal level, not go below it, not go above it. It's something that we're really going to have to learn how to do, and it's not being helped by the current theories of human origins, the Darwinian theories, I believe. I think we need some new explanations for human origins.
Thanks, Michael. And so you are also a member of the World Archaeological Congress and the European Association of Archaeologists, but people have been trying to suppress your work. Can you tell us briefly about that and what's been happening with that?
Well, there are a lot of different reactions to my work. Of course, I'm not presenting a mainstream idea at the present moment. So there are different reactions within the scientific world to my work. There's one group of scientists that I would call the fundamentalist Darwinist, who are really committed to that theory for reasons that go beyond scientific reasons. It's become a kind of an ideology for them, a kind of religion for them that simply cannot be questioned. So they tend not to want to hear what I have to say, and they don't want others to hear what I have to say. So sometimes scientists in this group, my books are published in about 20 different languages, so I get invitations to speak at universities all over the world. And sometimes some scientists, they try to stop lectures that I've been scheduled to give at universities in different countries. Not all the time, and they've never been totally successful in stopping them, but they have tried. So that can happen. But within the world of science, there are some more open-minded scientists who may believe in the theory of evolution for more or less scientific reasons, but they're open-minded enough to be willing to listen to alternatives. They're willing to listen to evidence that contradicts their theories, and they're open-minded enough to be able to modify their ideas. So it's scientists in that group who have invited me to speak at meetings of the World Archaeological Congress and European Association of Archaeologists. They've invited me to present my ideas at scientific institutions around the world, like the Royal Institution in London, the Russian Academy of Sciences. They've invited me to speak at universities all over the world. And I think that's important, because if ideas are going to change, the very first thing that has to happen is people have to be willing to listen to new ideas and not try to silence the voices of people who are expressing ideas that are out of the mainstream. And among that open-minded group of scientists, there are some who actually agree with me. Of course, they are few in number at the present moment, but that's the way these things go. It's one reason I have some respect for Charles Darwin, because at the time he started promoting his ideas, they weren't the mainstream ideas, but he had the courage to say, this is what I think, this is what I believe the real story of the origin of species is, And so I respect that. I think now that 200 years have gone by, we need to start thinking about some new ideas. But, you know, I have respect for him. And actually, I have respect for everyone. If somebody honestly believes that the Darwinian theory of evolution is the way to go, then I respect that decision. I respect the right of each individual to believe what they want to believe about the origin and purpose of life. However, I don't think they have the right to use the government to enforce their ideas on everyone through the education system and exclude alternative ideas like intelligent design or creationism or whatever. That's what I would disagree with. I think it's up to each individual scientist to believe what they want to believe or conclude what they want to conclude based on the evidence about the origin of life and the purpose of life. I respect that, but I don't think that a group of scientists has a right, even if they're the majority, has a right to have an exclusive monopoly for their ideas in the education system.
Thank you, Michael. And so we're out of time. I'm wondering if there's anything else that you would like to add before we close the show.
Well, I could just add that in Vancouver on the 4th and 5th of March, I'll be at a conference that is going to be held at the Delta Hotel in Richmond on the evenings there. And then also on the 6th of March at 11:30 a.m., I'll be at Banyan Books in Vancouver.
Wonderful. And you'll be discussing the same concepts that we've talked about today?
Yes, the same concepts that we're talking about today, not just myself, but other speakers as well. It's a conference that's being organized for speakers on alternative science. It's going to be held March 4th and March 5th, Friday and Saturday, at the Delta Hotel, Richmond.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for being on the show, Michael.
Thank you, Marie.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. So again, that was Michael Cremo, and so he will be in Vancouver March 4th and 5th at the hotel, Delta Hotel in Richmond. And if you want more information on him, go to mcremo.com, mcremo.com, or you can just Google Forbidden Archaeologist. The Forbidden Archaeologist is the name of his book. So thank you so much for being with us today. Have a fantastic Friday and a fantastic weekend. I'm so happy to be back for the new year speaking to you again. And I will be back next week. We'll be talking about the caregivers Tao Te Ching. So that will be very interesting. And I hope that you have enjoyed the first show of the year, or the first show with me back of the year. So up next is Scotty's Scenic Drive. I'm going to close the show with a song by Rachel Keogh Iwasa, and this is a brand new album that was recorded right here in Vancouver. Have a great day.